Chapter 10. The spell begins to break. Now we must go back to Mr. and Mrs. Beaver and the other three children. As soon as Mr. Beaver said, there was no time to lose, everyone began bundling themselves into coats, except Mrs. Beaver, who started picking up sacks and laying them on the table and said, "Now, Mr. Beaver, just reach down that ham, and here's a packet of tea, and there's sugar and some matches, and if someone will go get 2 or 3 loaves out of the crock over in the corner." "What are you doing, Mrs. Beaver?" exclaimed Susan. "Packing a load for each of us, dearie," said Mrs. Beaver very coolly. "You don't think we'll set off on a journey with nothing to eat, did you?" "But we haven't time," said Susan, buttoning the collar of her coat. "She may be here any minute." "That's what I say," chimed in Mr. Beaver. "Get along with you," said his wife. "Think it over, Mr. Beaver. She can't be here for 1/4 hour at least." "But don't we want as big as the start as we can possibly get?" said Peter. "It would have reached the stone table before her." "You got to remember that, Mrs. Beaver," said Susan. "As soon as she looked in here and finds that we're gone, she'll be off at top speed." "That she will," said Mrs. Beaver. "But we can't get there before her, whatever we do, for she'll be on a sledge and we'll be walking." "Then have we no hope?" said Susan. "Now don't get fussing there, as a dear," said Mrs. Beaver. "But just get 6 dozen clean handkerchiefs out of the drawer. Course we got hope. We can't get there before her, but we can keep under cover and go by ways she won't expect, and perhaps we'll get through." "That's true enough, Mrs. Beaver," said her husband, "but it's time that we're all out of this." "And don't you stop fussing now, Mr. Beaver," said his wife. "There, that's better. There's 5 loads, and the smallest of them for the smallest of us. That's you, my dear," she added, looking at Lucy. "Oh, do please come on," said Lucy. "Well, I'm nearly ready now," answered Mrs. Beaver, at last allowing her husband to help her into her snow boots. "I suppose the sewing machine is too heavy to bring?" "Yes, it is," said Mr. Beaver. "A great deal too heavy. And you don't think you'll be able to use it while we're on the run, I suppose?" "I can't abide the thought of the witch fiddling with it," said Mrs. Beaver, "and breaking it or stealing it, as likely as not." "Oh, please, please, please do hurry," said the three children. And so at last they all got outside, and Mr. Beaver locked the door. "It'll delay her a bit," he said. And they set off, all carrying their loads over their shoulder. The snow had stopped and the moon had come out when they began their journey. They went in single file, first Mr. Beaver, then Lucy, then Peter, then Susan, then Mrs. Beaver, last of all. Mr. Beaver led them across the dam and on the right of the bank of the river, and then a very rough sort of path among the trees right down the river bank. The side of the valley, shining in the moonlight, towered far above the rest of either's hand. "Best keep down here as much as possible," he said. "She'll have to keep at the top, for she couldn't bring a sledge down here." It would have been a pretty scene to look at through the window of a comfortable armchair, and even as things were, Lucy enjoyed at first. But when, as they went on and walking and walking and walking, and as the sack she was carrying felt heavier and heavier, she began to wonder how she was going to keep it all up. And as she stopped looking at the dazzling brightness of the frozen river, with its waterfalls of ice and the great white masses of the treetops, and the great glaring moon, and the countless stars, and could only watch the short legs of Mr. Beaver going pad, 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 pad through the snow in front of her, as if they were never going to stop. Then the moon disappeared, and the snow began to fall once more. And at last Lucy was tired that she was almost asleep and walking at the same time, when suddenly she found Mr. Beaver had turned from the riverbank to the right and was leading them steeply uphill in the very thickest of bushes. And then she came fully awake and found that Mr. Beaver was just vanished into a little hole in the bank, which had almost been hidden under the bushes until you were quite on top of it. In fact, by the time she realized what was happening, only the short, flat tail was showing. Lucy immediately stooped down and crawled in after him. Then she heard noises scrambling, puffing, and panting behind her, and in a motion, all 5 of them were inside. "Where is this?" said Peter's voice, sounding tired and pale in the darkness. "I hope you know what I meant by voice sounding pale." "It's an old hiding place for beavers in bad times," said Mr. Beaver, "and a great secret. It's not much of a place, but we must get a few hours of sleep. If you hadn't all been such in a plaguey fuss when we were starting, I'd brought some pillows," said Mrs. Beaver. It wasn't nearly as nice of a cave as Mrs. Thomas, Lucy thought. Just a hole in the ground, but earthy and dry. And it was very small, and it was so small that when they all lay down, there was a bundle of clothes together. And with that, and being warmed up by the long walk, they were already really rather snug. And if the floor of the cave had been a little smoother, then Mrs. Beaver handed round in the dark a little flask of which everyone drank something. It made one cough and a splutter, a little stung of the throat, but it made you feel deliciously warm after you swallowed it. And everyone went straight to sleep. It seemed to Lucy only minutes, though really it was hours and hours later, when she woke up feeling a little cold, dreadful stiff, and thinking how she would like a hot bath. Then she felt a set of long whiskers tickling her cheek and saw the cold daylight coming in through the mouth of the cave. But immediately after, she was very wide awake indeed, and so was everyone else. In fact, they were all sitting up with their mouths and eyes wide open, listening to the sound of which was the very sound they've all been thinking of, and something imagining they heard during the walk last night. It was the sound of jingling bells. Mr. Beaver was out of the cave like a flash the moment they heard it. Perhaps you think, as Lucy thought for a moment, that is a very silly thing to do, but it was really a sensible one. He knew he could scramble to the top of the bank among bushes and brambles without being seen, and he wanted above all to see which way the witch's sledge went out. The others sat in the cave, waiting and wondering. They waited nearly 5 minutes. Then they heard something very frightening that frightened them very much. They heard the sounds. Oh! They heard voices. Oh! Thought Lucy. He's been seen. She's caught him. Great was their surprise when a little later, while later, they heard Mr. Beaver's voice calling to them from just outside the cave. It's all right, he was shouting. Come out! Mrs. Beaver, come out. Mrs. Beaver, come out. Sons and daughter of Adam, it's all right. It isn't her. This was bad grammar, of course, but this is how beavers talk when they're excited. I mean, in Narnia, in our world, they usually don't talk at all. So, Mrs. Beaver and the children came bundling out of the cave, all blinking in the daylight, and with earth all over them, and looking frowsy and unbrushed and uncombed, and with sleep in their eyes. Come on, cried Mr. Beaver, who was almost dancing with delight. Come and see. This is the nasty knock for the witch. It looks as if her power is already crumbling. What do you mean, Mr. Beaver? Panting Peter, as they scrambled to the up the steep bank of the valley together. Didn't I tell you, answered Mrs. Beaver, that she always made it winter and never Christmas? Didn't I tell you? Well, just come and see. And then they were all at the top and did see. It was a sledge. It was reindeer with bells on the harness. But they were far bigger than the witch's reindeer, and they were not as white, but brown. And on the sledge sat a very person whom everyone knew the moment they set eyes on him. He was a huge man with a bright red robe, bright as holly berries, with a hood that was had for inside it, and a great white beard that fell like a foamy waterfall over his chest. Everyone knew him because they thought, even though you see people of all sorts in Narnia, you see pictures of them and hear them talk about it even in our world, the world on this side of the wardrobe door. But when you really see them in Narnia, it's rather different. Some pictures of Father Christmas in our world made him look only funny and jolly. But now the children actually stood looking at him. They didn't find it quite that like that. He was so big and so glad and so real, they all became quite still. They felt very glad, but also solemn. I've come at last, said he. She has kept me out for some time. Sorry. She has kept me out for a long time, but I have got it in the last. Aslan is on the move. The witch's magic is weakening. And Lucy felt running through her deep shiver of a gladness, which only you get when you are in the being solemn and still. And now, said Father Christmas, for your presents. There is a new and better sewing machine for you, Mrs. Beaver. I will drop it at your house as I pass. If you please, sir, said Mrs. Beaver, making a curtsy. It's locked up. Locks and bolts do make no difference to me, said Father Christmas. As for you, Mr. Beaver, when you get home, you will find your dam finished and mended, and all the leaks have stopped, and a new sluice gate fitted. Mr. Beaver was so pleased that he opened his mouth very wide and found he couldn't say anything at all. Peter, Adam's son, said Father Christmas. Here, sir, said Peter. These are your presents, was the answer. And they're not toys. They are toys. Tools, not toys. The time to use them is perhaps near at hand. Bear them well. With these words, he handed Peter a shield and a sword. The shield was the color of silver, and across it there was a ramped red lion, as bright as the ripe strawberry at the moment when you pick him. The hilt of the sword was of gold, and it had a sheath and a sword belt and everything needed. And it was just right size from the weight for Peter to use. Peter was silent and solemn as he received these gifts, for it felt they were very serious kind of presents. Susan, daughter of Eve, said Father Christmas, these are for you. He handed her a bow and a quiver full of arrows and just a little ivory horn. You must use this bow only in great need, he said, for I do not mean for you to fight in the battle. It does not easily miss, and when you put the horn to your lips and blow it, then wherever you are, I think help of some kind will come to you. Last of all, Lucy, Eve's daughter. Lucy came forward. He gave a little bottle of what looked like glass, but people said afterwards that it was made of diamonds and a small dagger. In the bottle, he said, there's a cordial made of the juice of one of the fire flowers that grow in the mountain of the sun. If you or any one of your friends are hurt, a few drops of this will restore them. And the dagger is to defend yourself in great need, for you are also not to be in the battle. Why, sir, said Lucy, I think I don't know. But I think I could be brave enough. That is not the point, he said. But battles are ugly and when women fight. And now, here he suddenly looked grave. Here is something for the moment for all of you. He brought out, I suppose from the big bag on his back, but nobody quite saw him do it. A large tray containing 5 cups and saucers, a lump of sugar, a jug of cream, and a great teapot sizzling, all piping hot. Then he cried out, Merry Christmas! Long live the true king! And cracked his whip. And he and the reindeer and the sledge all were out of sight before anyone realized they had started. Peter had drawn on his sword out and the sheath of it showing it to Mr. Beaver. When Mrs. Beaver said, now then, don't stand there. Don't stand talking now. Till the tea's got cold, just like men. Come and help. To carry the tray down, we'll have breakfast. What a mercy, I thought, of bringing the bread knife. So down the steep bank they went, and back to the cave, and Mr. Beaver cut some of the bread and hammed into sandwiches, and Mrs. Beaver poured out the tea, and everyone began enjoying themselves. But long before they had finished enjoying themselves, Mrs. Beaver said, time to be moving on.